Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. It is summertime, and this will be a summer unlike any summer that any of us have ever experienced while the world hangs under the cloud of the coronavirus. Because of this, I think we need escape more than ever. And the last couple of summers, my podcasts have been my tropical summers, where we focus on a tiki or tropical or adjacent type bar. And this summer is no exception. So I'm trying to pick places that are open, at least at the time that I interviewed them. Open partially, open more, which means that we are using the phones and we are traveling around the globe just a bit to see who we can talk to, who is still sort of functioning or doing what they can do to still give us a little bit of escape in that tropical way that we love so much. So sit back, make yourself a Mai Tai, and let's enjoy our tropical summer. Today we are going to go to oh-so-tropical Kentucky. Yes, I know that's what you think of when you think of the tropics, but I have a friend. Her name is Olivia Griffin, and I knew her in the Bay Area, which is where she was born and raised, but life took her to Kentucky, Louisville to be exact, and she opened a couple businesses there and then decided, you know what this town needs? It needs a tiki bar. That sort of thing had not really been done in that part of town, so she's taken it upon herself to teach the people of Kentucky about tiki, yes, smack dab, in the heart of whiskey territory. So join us while we talk about whiskey and rum, tiki in Kentucky, creating community, which has become much more important than it ever was, especially in Louisville right now, and how Olivia has made herself and the Limbo a big part of that community, and a whole lot more. I mean, we're going to talk about music too, surf music. So much surf music. It's good to see your face. I love this hair. I'm jealous of that hair.
Yeah, I just got my hair done. It's taken like all of COVID for me to get my hair done. Finally.
Well, I always start this by having people introduce themselves and where they are. So go ahead and tell everybody who you are, even though I know.
My name's Olivia Griffin, and I'm in Louisville, Kentucky, and I run a bar called The Limbo.
The Limbo. I remember a couple years ago you sent me a note on Facebook and said, hey, want to move to Louisville and run a bar with me? And I was like, I can't do that. Yeah. I've got a job, and I just moved back to LA. So how many years have you had The Limbo now?
It's been 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, January of what, 2018, I think,
Wow,
we opened.
that's wild to
I
think
know,
it's
it's
been so
crazy. It
quick.
feels like a lifetime ago. Oh my
Right? What made
God.
you open a bar? Because you are, I've always thought, one of these serial entrepreneurs. You've owned many businesses since I've known you. You've had vintage stores and hat
Yeah.
shops, and I think you still have these things, right?
Yeah, so I have a hat shop still, but work, I mean, everything's kind of in flux with COVID. It's like I'm probably moving locations and kind of changing the business model. Brick and mortar has been in the decline for years, so this is just like nail in the coffin. So it's like you have to rethink every way you do business. And the bar was kind of a result of just throwing fucking parties my whole life and then never getting paid to throw these dope parties. Like starting in San Francisco, I was just throwing parties at my retail stores. Like I should have opened a bar then. I don't know why.
Yeah, I remember going to some of those parties, the backyard parties at Paul's Hat
I'm just
Shop in San
like,
Francisco.
why do I just keep throwing parties everywhere? And then I was in grad school here for business. And just the industry here in Louisville, like the service industry, the bar and restaurant industry is super strong. And like one of our biggest champions with bourbon and the Bourbon Trail. So it's like everyone you hang out with here is in the service industry. It's like that's the thing. Like if you're not in medical and you're not working for Amazon or UPS, you're working for a bar or restaurant. So it's like once you hang out with those people, you know, then you just get in with them. Same with tiki. It's like once you get into tiki, it just kind of sucks you in.
Yeah, so I mean, was
When
that what made you get into Tiki? Was you're like, you just found the community? You're like, because you're drawn to community. I know that about you.
I decided I wanted to open a bar, and it was kind of like a no question, no brainer. It would be a tiki bar just because growing up in San Fran and like going to Smuggler's Cove all the fucking time. Like, I wasn't even necessarily super, super nerdy into tiki before I opened the bar. It was just like already a part of my community. Like, musically, you know, my ex-husband Rick would play at Forbidden Island, and we'd always get dressed up in Hawaiiana shit. It's like the vintage world crossed over with like the music scene that I was hanging out with, crossed over with the kind of bars that I felt like most comfortable and were the most fun. So just like, oh yeah, Louisville and Kentucky doesn't have a tiki bar. I thought someone would open it, you know, by the time I did. I was like, oh sure, someone will open a tiki bar here, you know, it'll happen. And then no one did, and I was like, fuck, I have to do
Well, your tiki bar isn't one of those, like, it isn't like a Forbidden Island Smuggler's Cove tiki bar in the sense that, you know, it's dark and enclosed and covered in thatch and not those are bad things. That's just, you know, the kind that we saw in San Francisco. From what I've seen, I haven't been able to visit you yet. I would love to get to Louisville, and if this COVID thing ever ends, which is going to, I can't wait to get out there just to visit in general. But you've got this place that looks like a really vibrant, sunny, you know, like fun. Not that other ones aren't fun, but it's the party you were talking about. It sounds like you've always got a party going on there.
So we have a lot more space than you can tell on social media. So we have a big patio, which has been a lifesaver in terms of like staying safe during COVID. But then we also have like almost like a slightly bigger room than like say Forbidden Island that's dark and enclosed, no natural light. So we have like both. In the winter, it's like we have a whole separate bar, and then the summer we have the outside bar. So we have these little private rooms, also. So I feel safe that we have a lot of space. I just came from a meeting with like one of our local celebrity chef restaurateurs here and a bunch of other restaurateurs because we're all trying to create our own bar and restaurant coalition with our own COVID safety procedures and where we will check up on each other so that we can create like a track record of us complying. So if the governor wants to shut us down, we can hopefully stay open. Because if those of us that shut down, if we have shut down again, whew, I don't know. It's bad.
Well, you've also been participating, like, in the community at large, because I've noticed that you guys have, you've been taking part in, you call it Injustice Park. I don't know if that's what it's called out there right now, because there's been a lot of upheaval in Louisville right now, and I know that you've been out there on the front lines helping people.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so we've been like putting together a barbecue grill and grilling for the people at the park on the weekends. And it's a mishmash of protesters and houseless people and small kids. And it's been really intense to see, like, our downtown completely shut down. It's like everything's boarded up. It's a war zone. But it's safe. It's not safe. It was just one weekend of riots kind of, like, destroyed downtown, and then everyone boarded up, and now a ton of bars and restaurants are closing, like, on the weekday,
or on the weekends they're closing. Sorry, it clicked out for a second. They're closing on the weekends?
Oh. No, a lot of bars and restaurants downtown have closed permanently, in the past 3 weeks. Like, every week there's another one. And the only reason my bar is surviving in the middle of this, like, desert of dead businesses is because I've built a community already, and because I'm finding a new community and participating with people at Injustice Park and Black Lives Matter and a bunch of different people that I otherwise would not have met if these protests weren't happening. And now they're coming to my bar and realizing it's, like, a safe and welcoming place for not just white people. It's been really interesting, like, finding new customers, retaining the community I already had, and then finding and having to explore entirely new revenue streams, but wanting to go back to, like, supporting live music, because we're like a tiny live music venue with lots of performing arts, drag and burlesque, and we hire bands usually, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, which is a lot for a bar. It's like, how can we change that business model? Because it's going to be hard for me to pay what I was paying bands before. But they've been out of work too for 4 months. So it's just this crazy dilemma.
Well, you've been offering really diverse programming, I think, the whole time, right? And like you said, you have music. So what made you decide that music was going to be a part of having your bar? It was just the space that you happened to get? Or did you always want music at your bar?
I always wanted music. I mean, again, the whole opening bar was bred from the events I was already throwing, which always had live bands. So whether they were, like, at my retail stores, or, like, once I moved here, I started throwing burlesque events with live music at other people's bars. There's always been a live music component. It's so important. And again, it's like, the internet has taken so many things away from us. I think, like, experiential things like retail, brick and mortar, and, like, but one thing, like, it's just not the same seeing something live streamed and then seeing it in person if it's a musician. And I mean, I think we can do a lot of cool stuff with live streaming right now, but I think nothing will ever replace the experience of going into a bar, there are people you do not know, and having a drink and watching live music. So, you know, that's just, it's fundamental to my mental health.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. And live music is very much, you know, in peril right now too, because venues are shutting down left and right. There's a legendary spot out here called, it used to be Spaceland. Now it's a Satellite, that just announced no more live music there. And they did it for like 25 or 27 years. I'm sure you heard out in San Francisco, Slim's has closed down permanently. So, you know, that's gone.
Wow.
So what kind of music, what's your favorite music to book when you're playing, when you're doing this over at your spot? What do you like sharing with people? I know you have all kinds of stuff.
Of stuff that we book. Like, I kind of like to give every band a shot and then see, do they have a draw, or do they keep people there longer than I think they'd be? Are they fun? Obviously, surf rock, we hire, you know, we have a local surf rock band that plays, or they're playing this Saturday, and they play every last Saturday. And they're called The Get Down, and they just play straight up fucking surf rock. It's great. But I've also been lucky to hire some bigger names in surf rock. Like, the Red Elvises have played twice, and they were scheduled to play again this year. We'll see what happens. And then Messer Chups is incredible.
Them. Yeah.
So they played, and that was kind of like, someone tipped me off about them and that they were like kind of passing through this way on a tour, and I was like, stop off here. So they had a lot of fun. I've been recently in touch with one of the guys from the Straitjackets happened mm-hmm. to come into my bar the night the Red Elvises were playing. Because mm-hmm. they were playing like a block away. Mm-hmm. And my friend was producing the show. She's like, go down to this tiki bar. The Red Elvises are playing. So he walked down Greg Townsend and mm-hmm. we became friends. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, if we ever schedule a tour and it like passes through, we'll work something out. So
that would be incredible.
It would be fucking incredible to have those Straight Jackets at my little bar. It'd be so fun. It'd be such a good show. Like,
well, what are your favorite bands? I mean, I don't know that you were into surf music before you learned about this whole culture and everything.
There's something about like surf rock and Quentin Tarantino, and it was all wrapped up in like my teenagehood. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, the Pulp Fiction soundtrack is like, it just feels like, smells like Teenage Spirit. Like, I've always liked surf rock. It's always been just kind of a genre I've really enjoyed. We have some really cool, like, vintage-y bands that come through that mm-hmm. get all dressed up and sing old songs. One band here called Randy Gazoo, they're really eccentric. Another couple... There are like these couples that live here that are like living out their vintage lifestyle. It's not a huge community, not compared mm-hmm. to San Francisco, but there's a mm-hmm. few little pockets of fun performers that come through. And then we sometimes get some cool bands from Nashville because Nashville's only 2 hours away. And we've hired a really cool band many times called Laurel and the Lovin'. They've got incredible sound and they're really young and they have like so much potential. So it's really fun to like discover new bands. Sometimes I feel like if I didn't own a bar, I'd be like a music agent. You know, like when you've been around music, like I'm not a musician, but when you've been around so many shows yeah. and musicians and you understand how the business from the musician side and the back side, it's like you feel like you can identify a good new band. You're like, this band is good, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
but you've been, that's awesome. But you've also, been, you know, you've provided what I'm wondering if it's new kind of entertainment for Louisville. I mean, obviously there hasn't been a tiki bar there until you opened one. And what is your Tuesdays? Is it Titty Tuesdays? Is that what you call it?
Titty Tiki Tuesday. That was last night. Titty Tiki Tuesday. It's great. I mean, and we brought it back since COVID, and it's a drag and burlesque show that happens every Tuesday, mm-hmm. which is a big commitment. But it's definitely been busier and more popular now than it was before COVID.
Yeah.
And now, like, you know, and having to comply with everything and to be safe, well, instead of having one show a night, we do two shows and it's ticketed. So it's pre-sale tickets, which is great for cash flow. Mm-hmm. And then we can kind of control capacity that way too. Mm-hmm. So that's been something that's worked. You know, I will likely have to start charging a door cover for any time we have live music mm-hmm. just because, you know,
survival.
Legally can't have as many patrons and we don't have as many patrons as before. A lot of people mm-hmm. still don't feel safe going out at all, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Are you doing a takeout thing as well? Takeout and delivery as well?
We're doing takeout and delivery, mm-hmm. but as like a tiki bar,
yeah.
A lot of people don't even know what Hawaiian food is here, you know, like, it's not, like, so, like, we're signing up for, like, all the, like, Uber Eats and, like, Postmates and all that bullshit, which I fucking hate because they take 33%.
They do, and here in LA, and maybe you, since you have some in with your city council types, they actually put a cap on the amount of service charges they could do shortly into the delivery time because it just eats up the profit. So LA was able to get that passed. So I don't know if you guys can have similar
that's
sorts
a great
of chats.
Idea. I mean, we're forming this restaurant coalition and like, that's one of the things that we need to address. It's like restaurants already barely make margins as it is. And then you're going to charge me 33% on a dish that I'm like, that's all I'm making on it anyway. Yeah. So like, I'm basically just giving away free food. Like,
right. It's a huge public service thing to let people know, go pick it up from there. Because if you use these delivery services, they take all the profit away from the restaurants. So I think check with your city council people because they want these businesses to live somehow and not, you know, what is Uber Eats going to do for them? Nothing. So,
yeah.
So yeah, look into
that. So like when I'm signing up for those. There's not even a genre for Hawaiian food. Like, they're like, what kind of restaurant are you? Like, there's not even, you can't even, like, pick it out. So I just pick, like, Japanese other because I have poke bowl. You know what I mean? Like, I was so annoyed. I'm like, really? Come on. Like, but yeah, so we're not, like, the first place people think of when they think of takeout. But I think our Hawaiian menu, which we revamped during COVID, has gotten, like, a lot more traction. People really are enjoying it. And so we're getting some like weekly, you know, things. But the main thing we've done that's picked up is we started this rum club every Thursday where we have members and it's like a reoccurring payment of $20 a week. And we deliver a quart or we deliver four times a cocktail and a rum sample.
Nice.
And they have a little journal and they get to put a recipe in it. And then every Thursday night, I do a live stream on Instagram with someone in the rum world. So that's been really, really fun. And just a little tiny source of reoccurring revenue midweek. And I'm learning a lot. They're learning a lot. I get to nerd out and make cocktails that aren't on my menu, you know.
I was gonna say we should talk about the cocktail side of it because I feel like I saw you, did you have Ian Burrell on there? No, I feel like you had somebody very recently.
I had Bailey Pryor on.
Bailey, recently. That's what it was for Real McCoy.
Yeah. So this week, I'm going to do Plantation Pineapple and have my friend Adrienne Stoner on there. She lives in Chicago. She's a rep for Plantation. So, yeah, it's been really fun. Bailey's like, come down to Barbados. And I'm like, come there, bro.
I know. You're like, is Barbados still letting us visit? I don't know if they are, but as soon as they are.
Yeah. As soon as they are, I am so down there.
So, well, let's talk about you and your cocktails because, you know, you being a bartender was not something I had ever considered to be in your repertoire when I knew you before. But, of course, if I know anything about Olivia, she can do anything. So what started you on your bartending journey?
Well, honestly, when I was in undergrad getting my degree in costume design, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a costume designer, so I'm going to make no money, so I need to learn how to bartend. So I actually found, like, a bartending school, and, like, I know bartending schools get, like, trashed, and they're like, that doesn't count as experience, but honestly, like, it was, like, a two-week program. I did it for free because I helped them add bars to their database or whatever. It was just, like, 2 weeks, a few hours, like, from 4 to 6, 5 days a week. But I, like, learned a fuck ton of shit in 2 weeks that would have probably taken me, like, you know, 6 months at a bar to learn. Like, I learned, like, all this basic shit. Like, some people can't even put a shaker together, you know what I mean? So, like, you learn, like, how to hold a bottle. Like, when you first start bartending, like, it's just so awkward. You're like, I'm, like, turning it upside down, you know what I mean? Like, it really was great. So, like, I went to bartending school, and I was, like, I was getting ready to graduate from my costume design program, so I was, like, had some theater gigs and was applying to work at bars, but of course, like, in the service industry in any city, you have to know people to get in with them. I didn't really know people in the service industry. I know musicians, and I know, like, theater people. So I was applying to all these bars, not getting any interviews, nothing happening, and then I, like, randomly bought the hat shop, and I bought a hat shop. That just threw a wrench in, like, the whole kind of be a bartender thing. But I feel nerdy about it. And so when I throw these parties at the hat shop or my vintage store, like, I'd always be making some fun cocktails
themed
event. And it really is just like, I like to cook and I like to drink, and it's just, like, hand in hand. So yeah. And I never, like, was a bartender at any time. I just would bartend my events or other people's events or guest bartend for fun. And so, yeah, when I opened the Tiki Bar, I had a consultant work with me who had worked for a distributor for a while. So she had a lot of, like, inside knowledge of how to kind of pick and choose liquors for your well, your cocktails. And she had a really good knowledge of Tiki, more than I did, and taught me and helped me with my first menu. And, like, we learned a lot quickly. And then I've had some people work for me that were really knowledgeable and, like, brought really cool things to the table. But I mean, yeah, once you get into rum and you really just start exploring it, it's pretty wonderful.
Rum is an insane category if you start thinking about it too much. I mean, it's to try to immerse yourself in that. It seems like it's endless, you know, because so many countries can produce it. So during your explorations, have you found any rums right now that you're in love with? There's got to be all kinds of fun stuff out there. Real McCoy, I'm a huge fan of, personally. I love those guys. And Bailey is very fun. He's a very interesting person.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to watch this film. I almost watched it the other night, and then I got distracted, but I'm going to watch it. I think that's so cool. And I think there's a lot of people in the liquor, in like the smaller brands, not just in rum, but locally here that like we have like a small gin producer. It seems like a lot of people get into liquor production on accident. Like they were doing something else. And because they weren't like, I'm going to start a rum company. It's like, I'm making this film and fell in love with this process. And now I want to have my own rum company. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's anything, you know, but it's just cool to hear. Like some people are in it because their family's been in it forever. But then there's a lot of new companies popping up where it's like totally random how they got into making.
Well, you're out there in Louisville, which we, you know, we said at the beginning is like, it's Bourbon Trail. That is historically a whiskey town, but you just mentioned gin. So what kind of, booze are you discovering now that you're in, you've been in Louisville for how many years now?
It's been like 6 years.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a lot of, like, there's a company here in Louisville called Holy Gin, H-O-L-I, and it's this Indian guy who used his mother's, like, chai recipe to infuse this gin with all of these, like, chai spices from his mom.
Oh, my God. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's really great. It's not at all like a traditional kind of herbal gin. It's definitely more sweet. It's like a cocktail gin for sure. But so his company's here. Castle and Key is a newer company. They will have bourbon, but they're so new, their bourbon's still aging. But they have a really nice gin. Yeah, there's a lot of new liquor companies cropping up that are actually producing that aren't just white labeling stuff. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of rum, like, I think what I've Melissa Pinkerton from Spearbomb gifted us a Rum JM like XO bottle for our anniversary, so I've been sipping on that.
Yeah, that's a nice one. What kind of drinks have you come up with that you're proud of? Because you've become, you know, you're creating the cocktails now, and it's been a couple of years. It's like, so
it's interesting being in Kentucky again, like. A lot of people here will come in and be like, what is a tiki bar? You know, like we're going back to the basics. We can't get too crazy with the cocktails because most people we're catering to are from the Midwest and they've never seen a tiki bar, and just a pina colada is a mind blow for them already. Like, and then with COVID, I reduced my menu by 2/3 because I can't afford to carry the amount of product I had
before. There's no way.
Yeah. So it's like on our menu currently, the classics that we have are Painkiller, Pina Colada, Blue Hawaiian, Hurricane, Zombie. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few originals on there. So like we'll put out little seasonal cocktail menus, and whenever there's a star player on one of those, we'll pull it onto our main menu. So we have like, we call it the Stingray, which is our like token tequila drink on the menu. And we make a really beautiful verdita out of pineapple juice, a cilantro, mint, and jalapeno. And so we make our own verdita, and that makes that drink just incredible. And we put like a kiwi syrup in it. So it's like a kiwi spicy pineapple margarita. It's really dope. It sells really well in the summer months, and it's relatively cost effective because we're looking at cost. Like my cocktails are broken down to the penny, like straw. Yeah. Umbrella, you have to account for all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Especially in tiki, because you've got like 100 garnishes. Because like the garnish may cost you more than the cocktail. You know?
That is true. Is your garnish game strong then?
My garnish game is strong. I mean, I'm all about over the top. That's just my personal aesthetic. And I get the tiki bars that are more like modern and clean and like not as garnish forward. And I respect that. But what we're doing is like the full thing again, because people haven't been to a tiki bar. We're just kind of giving them the whole experience. So,
yeah. Well, so since you've been open about 2 years now, how have people, you've created a community. You think you've got some tiki people there now? Or are they getting into finding the old
everyone who's joined the Rum Club, which now has between like 19 and 25 members weekly. Mm-hmm. Everyone who's joined that is definitely getting into rum. And given that we're bourbon people, we're used to drinking spirits neater on the rocks, like rum is the obvious transition out of bourbon. Mm-hmm. It's like there's similarities. There's seemingly, it seems like there's a ton more rum than bourbons in general.
there are, but you know, I actually just had a rum, and actually it was a previous guest. Is you might be interested in this. It's called Equiano Rum, and it's named after like a British, a UK-based freed slave who has quite a story behind him. But Ian Burrell, who's the global rum ambassador, and Richard Seal of Foursquare, Barbados Rum, you know, he puts out Real McCoy. He's part of that. They teamed up to put out this rum, and I tasted it. My first thought was, this tastes like a bourbon. And they actually... Yeah. Cask it in like whiskey barrels, and I was like, this absolutely tastes like a bourbon. And there's so many times where I will dabble, you know, there's so many rums out there, and I'm like, these are so the gateway for whiskey people to find their way over to rum.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, most rum is aged in oak barrels, mm-hmm. and yeah, there's just like a lot of obvious crossover. Mm-hmm. And we play with bourbon in the tiki cocktails all the time. We ask people like, do you want to try it with bourbon? Because bourbon can cut the sweetness down a little bit, and it just tastes more boozy than rum because mm-hmm. it's less sweet.
Yep.
So if people like the taste of bourbon, like our bourbon painkiller is like one of our top selling things.
That sounds delicious. I never even thought of that before. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it's great. I mean, bourbon and orange and cherry.
Yeah.
Bourbon and lime, not so much, but bourbon and orange,
cherry, yeah. Oh.
That all works really well.
I'm going to make one of those this weekend. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Our painkillers are top selling drink for sure. And like we do like a honey coconut rim on like the big goblet glass. Like, you know, we're lighting shit on fire. People love
that. It's a tiki bar. You got to light shit on fire. What is your favorite thing from having opened this bar? What's something that you're just so stoked about with this bar?
I mean... Honestly, doing the food program was something that, like, I wasn't even intending to do at the start. And now that we've come from, like, making kind of more basic bitch stuff, like just, like, tacos and nachos and quesadillas to, like, full-on Hawaiian food with all the flavors where I have to go to all the weird Asian markets to get all the things I need. Like, that's been the most, like, unexpectedly rewarding. It's, like, a challenge I set myself to is, like, creating a Hawaiian food menu. Like, I've never worked in a commercial kitchen.
And now you have one.
You know what I mean? So that's been really rewarding. And then, and again, the live music aspect, being able to get in bands that I've admired as like a teenager mm-hmm. and being able to have them play in my bar is pretty magical.
What's your favorite bar that you have admired since a teenager that played in your bar?
The Red Elvises. Like when they were playing San Francisco at Slim's, I would go every single year. I was like front and center, the crazy dressed up girl that they would call on stage. And like when they played at my bar, there's only one of the original members, lead singer, still there. And I was like, I know it's weird, but you might actually remember me because I was that asshole that would get totally dressed up and you'd put me on stage every single fucking time. And then I showed him a picture of like me and his other bandmate from back in the day when I was like 18. He was like, oh shit. You know, like,
that's awesome.
That girl. Oh my God.
Well, I think we're hitting the half hour mark, so we can wrap this one up. So tell people how they can find you if they want to find that girl, find the bar or support the bar. Are you guys doing anything online that people remotely can help with? Are you selling merch? Do you have a GoFundMe? Any of that kind of stuff?
So we're kind of working on some new merch. I'm looking into getting some glassware made, and like a new kind of line of t-shirts and stuff for this purpose so that people coming in can leave with something mm-hmm. and support us. But you can find us on Instagram at Limbo Tiki Bar. And our website is thelimbo.club. And we need all the support we can get. It's going to be a tough year or two to get through this. Like we're looking at this realistically as like a year or two.
Yeah. As are we at our bar here in LA. Same, you know, we got to do what we got to do to survive. So, okay, everybody, so you know where to go now. Go check out thelimbo.club and Limbo Tiki Lounge, Limbo Tiki Room.
Limbo Tiki Bar.
Limbo Tiki Bar. So, but thanks so much. I really appreciate you taking the time and chat with us today. And hang in there. Keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I know.
Rocket Man.
So I'll repeat for you, since I sort of muddled it up at the end there. If you want to go help out, support the Limbo, and you're in Kentucky, go on down to the Limbo. Follow them on Instagram. It is Limbo Tiki Bar. You can go to the website, which is thelimbo.club. And of course, you can find the Limbo on Facebook. Check out if they've got new merch there. They had old merch. There's all kinds of fun stuff there. It's a really fun place, and I have to really commend Olivia for her hard work. She's always been a hard worker, and she's always been kind of an instigator, and she uses her power for good. So glad to hear that she is not only teaching the people of Kentucky about the tiki scene and the tiki world, but also using that to further build community and hopefully get good things to happen for the restaurant business, the bar business, and for the community in general with the other people that she has teamed up with out there. So good on you, Olivia. You are a rock star. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's BarkeeperSilverLake.com, and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.